This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Herndon deal. Chris Herndon joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That is, of course, Yeah by Usher, featuring Lil Jon and Ludacris. All-time jock jam, T. Morant look-alike Usher, 46 years old today.
All right, so we had, since we've last spoken, the Grizzlies played and defeated the Chicago Bulls, but it was a skeleton roster. No Ja, no Jaren, no Gigi, no Vince, no Marcus Smart, no Desmond Bane, no Santi Aldama, no Luke Kennard. Brandon Clark did play. That gave us an opportunity to see some others. I saw you tweeted about it. Impressed by Zach Edey?
Well, for a stretch. He got off to a rough start in that game. The first couple, they've been doing the shorter stretches, which right. I think may be the norm. But the first two or three stretches he was in the game, he was pretty rough. And then the last, he came in to finish the first half, the last like 3 minutes of the second quarter. And then he played, I think, a pretty long stretch to start the third, like a 7-8 minute stretch, something like that. And he was really good in those stretches, the end of the first half and the start of the second half. And that was definitely, it was easily the best he's looked in preseason. It seemed like he slowed down a little bit, got a little bit more comfortable, got a little bit more in rhythm. I think if it's a rookie, you tend to like play a little too fast, be a little too sped up. I mean, you're getting used to the size and the speed and the physicality of the game, which is different than what you dealt with in college. And so it was promising to see him have a good stretch. I don't have a lot of doubt that he's going to be good, but I do wonder about the growing pains with it.
Do you think there's much... I don't know. Given the fact that we've seen evidence of the growing pains, do you think you still think he's going to be the starting center in game one?
I think that's likely. I think Brandon Clark, someone who, has said he doesn't want to start.
Right.
He's someone who doesn't tend to play heavy minutes. I think you look at Brandon Clark, who he played really well in game one. Then he had knee soreness and didn't play in game two. And he played like 12 minutes and wasn't very effective in the game, this third game. And so I wonder a little bit about how much, game to game. If you want to make someone a starter, you want to be able to depend on them for 25 minutes every game. I don't think you can do that with Brandon Clark. So I think Zach Edey will start,
So if it's not Brandon Clark, by the way, what do you think? If I'm going to tell you that Zach Edey is not starting, what are the possibilities?
I think it's probably Brandon Clark. You don't have a lot of other possibilities there. You
it's
have
not Santi,
Aldama and
Santi,
Jay Huff.
Yeah, it's not Santi alongside Jaren.
Oh, I think that could be the case, but I don't think that's what they're going to want to do. And so I think you have to sort of be forced into that. And so I just think it's going to be Zach. I see no reason to think it's not going to be Zach Edey.
Yeah. Okay. I'll be honest. I didn't watch the game. So Drew also in his account pointed out the passing better from Zach Edey. 4 assists in this game. Notable?
The box score looks better. I'd have to go back and rewatch and see like how those assists came, like in the flow of the game. I certainly didn't notice him becoming Steven Adams as a playmaker.
Right.
But I just think that's the whole thing sort of, zero turnovers. He had 4 assists. I think the whole thing, everything is a byproduct of he just sort of got more comfortable.
Yeah. Box score looks good. 15 points, 8 rebounds, 3 blocks, 4 assists. Jalen Wells continued to put up shots and make some of them. He had 24. Your thoughts on his progress?
Well, he hit a clutch shot late, I think, for the second time in 3 preseason games, because he did that at Dallas, too. He's getting up a lot of shots. That's true. but he's making a pretty good percentage of them. Like I looked this up and now I don't remember. It was something like, you know, 9 of 20 or 8 of 19 or something like that on 3-pointers for 3 games. So the percentage is something like, you know, 39% or whatever. It's a 3-game sample. Who cares about the percentage? But he's got up a lot of threes. He made a lot of threes. He's 6'7". He's a perimeter player. He's a legitimate perimeter player who's legitimately 6'7". And he's got good shooting ability. And the Grizzlies roster, I think, could use more size on the perimeter. When you're talking about starting Marcus Smart, who's like 6'2 or whatever, small forward. Yeah, you know, Luke Kennard and Scottie Pippen. This team does not have a lot of size on the perimeter. So he's plus size in the context of the roster on the perimeter, and they also need more shooting. And so I don't want to make too much of some good preseason games from a second-round pick. But his size and his shooting ability are two things that they need, and he can potentially give them both. So I think if he continues to play well, he's got a chance to push himself into the mix.
I was talking to son Peter about the Grizz over the weekend, and he made the point. He said, of the serious teams out there, they're the worst shooting team. And like their shooting is, their lineup is so clearly deficient in shooting. Like, besides Desmond Bane, who are you counting on? I mean, Jaren is a good shooter for his position and size, but there's really only one shooter in the starting lineup right now with Mark, you know, whatever.
This is one of the reasons I wonder about the long-term fit of Marcus Smart as the starter. I think he'll begin the season as the starter. But I think, you know, if he's a 31% three-point shooter and Vince Williams turns out to be legitimately a 37, 38% three-point shooter, in addition to being a little bit bigger and a better rebounder, I just wonder where that's going to go. I wonder how much Luke Kennard... To me, like, for now, I mean, you know, Vince Williams is not in the mix right now. But so for now, like, the Marcus Smart, Luke Kennard question, like, they're totally different players. I read about this a couple weeks ago. They're, like, opposite kind of players. Who impacts the strength of your lineup more? Like, if all other things being equal, does the lineup perform better with Marcus Smart's defense or Luke Kennard's shooting? I don't know for certain what the answer to that is, but whatever the answer is, that could impact where the minutes go, right? And so I do wonder, I think it's true about the shooting in the starting lineup, because you're not going to get really any from Zach Edey. Anyway, I think they'll develop that, but in a consistent level, you're not getting any from Zach Edey. I think John Morant becoming a better shooter is important, but you can't
count on it.
Assume that. And I think Marcus Smart is what he is, and so I think that question could force some changes, if not to the starting lineup, then to the way you juggle your minutes to get more shooting on the floor, yes.
And are you convinced? I mean, you're convinced about Vince Williams as when he comes back as a defensive player, a rebounder, all of that. Are you convinced he's a, you know, at least a 36% 3-point shooter, or will be settle in at? We don't know.
No, I think 3-point shooting. There's a lot of variance in 3-point shooting, even among good shooters.
Right.
Like you could be the best shooter on the planet, and you could shoot 25% for a month. Like, you know,
Last year, he started dropping in threes in a way that he literally never has in his life.
Desmond Bane had a stretch early, I think maybe his second season. He had some stretch early in the season where he shot like 2 out of 18 from three. So 3-point shooting varies no matter who you are. And you're going for a small sample on Vince Williams. I think it looks pretty good. So I would bet he's going to be a pretty good 3-point shooter if I had to bet one way or the other, but I'm not convinced about anything with his shot, no.
It is interesting. You're putting up with Luke Kennard getting his offense but putting up with his defense, or getting Marcus Smart's defense and putting up with his offense. Which is worse, Luke's defense? Luke's defense is worse than Marcus Smart's offense. Shooting.
If you broaden it to offense instead of shooting, right? Because Marcus Smart is a good connective passer. He's got a good feel for the game. He'll sort of figure out a way to make plays. And so, yes, the totality of Marcus Smart's offense is better than the totality of Luke Kennard's defense.
Jake LaRavia, how's he fitting into all of this? And I gather, box score says he didn't shoot well. He did put up 20 points and got to the line a bunch.
Yeah, you know, the thing with Luke is, like, when he came in, everyone assumed he was going to be a shooting specialist because, you know, he's a white guy with a good shooting stroke who wasn't very athletic. And the reality has been the other way, that he's sort of a pretty good, effective all-around player, a guy who does a lot of different stuff, but you're waiting for the shooting to be more reliable. It's sort of going the other way. And so I think Jake looks like a real player to me. Now, being a real player and being like someone who you're going to give 20-something minutes to every single night, even when you're healthy, that's not the same thing. And so he's someone who could push up if the shots really start dropping and push Asante Aldama for minutes, or he's someone who like could look behind him and see Jalen Wills taking his spot. Like, he could really go either way with Luke. I think Jake. To me, Jake looks like a real player. I'm comfortable having Jake on my team and getting minutes on my team, but like, nothing's guaranteed for him, that's for sure.
Jay Huff continues to look good.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, and I'm one of them, watching Jay Huff and trying to figure out how he hasn't been on NBA roster yet. We've talked about, he can protect the rim and shoot threes. It may be that those are the only things he can do, like when you really get into it. Like it's not, you're not going to give him the ball and let him like go to the post and create a shot. Like, you're not going to, have him jump out, switch, and be on defense or whatever. It may be just like, I'm 7-1 at the rim and I can shoot threes, but like that's kind of enough, And I think given the way the roster set up with only four actual quote-unquote bigs on the main roster, I just think Jay Huff's going to play a ton. It is interesting. I would bet today that Scottie Pippen still gets that 14th spot that they do have to fill like within the first 2 weeks of the season. But I don't know if that's a certainty. Like, I wouldn't collapse in shock if like they went with Jay Huff instead with that spot.
Okay, the other Grizzly-related story that I finally read Joe Varden's piece over at The Athletic on, it was on Ja Morant and Williamson, and it was about Zion, and it was about whether, it really turned out to be, not whether they will become the teams, the players that they were intended to be or thought to be. It was really, it turned out to be more about a story about Team USA. And there was an exchange in this. There's a couple paragraphs in this story, and you were at camp, so I was going to ask you about them. He writes, Williamson mentioned that he, Morant, and Anthony Edwards of the Minnesota Timberwolves and Team USA were the young players he felt were positioned to one day become the American leaders of their sport. Morant was given the same chance to address these questions by The Athletic, but tersely declined. Memphis team spokespeople later clarified there was a misunderstanding, and Morant was simply focused on the Grizzlies. It was just notable that he put in the phrase tersely declined. Was that a public exchange? What was going on there?
It was in a scrum. Drew and I didn't make much of it because it almost felt sort of out of left field a little bit. And like, I didn't think it was a big deal. I think Ja had the sense. I think Ja probably feels a little, protective is not the right word. But I think he's a little sensitive to questions from national media people about like non-Grizzly specific stuff, and probably just assume someone's trying to ask some gotcha question or somebody's trying to create a quote or create a story. And I think I think he was reflexive about that. Now, has he also been out of shape about like not being asked to be on Team USA? Maybe, but I also think at some level, like, he's coming off a slavum tear. And so even if there were no other, even if like, none of the off-court stuff had ever happened, he still wasn't going to be on Team USA last summer because he was, like, rehabbing an injury. And so I just think I took it as a sensitivity to just a reflexive, I just assume they're trying to get me with this question, and I'm going to ignore that and move on to the other stuff. That's what I took out of.
It wouldn't surprise me if the Grizzlies felt, with the way Jaren was treated or what, his experience, I'll call it that way, his experience with Team USA, that they might not be wild fans of the Team USA program at this moment, but that struck me as just, I wasn't there, but they clearly have to focus on themselves here.
It's Grizzlies training camp, and they're to put in the new system, and you got to say all this. And again, to my point, John was rehabbing a major injury over the summer. It was not an option for him to be on Team USA. Right. Even if he wanted to be and the Team USA wanted him to be, he still wasn't going to be on that team.
Yeah. All right, did you, I don't know, like, it's preseason. Did you watch any of the Knicks-Timberwolves? It is a fun little thing that trade is so intriguing. And then, of course, we had the fallout yesterday with DiVincenzo getting into it with Rick Brunson, Jalen Brunson's father on the, I don't know. Like, I don't know if you caught any of that or your continuing level of intrigue over that trade.
No, I'm too busy with my own right. stuff that matters in my job and my life. I right. haven't been able to pay attention yeah. to that.
I happened upon it, and it was just I didn't even realize it was happening. Do you have further reflections right now? Would you have done the trade if you were both teams?
To me, it was sort of a difficult call on the front end. Nothing has really changed,
right.
you know, I sort of got the logic of it from both. I think Minnesota, it was like a get out of jail card for their tax situation in a way that like kept them competitive. That could be a lateral or maybe even make them better. They're at least the chance of that. And so the option to get off the town's contract in a way that like doesn't necessarily diminish you. I just think they had to, organizationally as a franchise, they probably felt like they had to do that. And I do think that it gives the Knicks, if in terms of what is the best five-man unit you can put on the floor in a playoff game, I do think that they have a better answer to that now than they did before, even with the town's defense question. And so, yeah, I sort of see the logic in it from both sides.
All right. Thank you, Chris. Talk to you tomorrow. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Grizzlies Pacers tonight by the way. Right now, Jeffrey, do you feel, relative to how you felt about the Grizzlies before training camp started, do you feel more optimistic, less optimistic, or exactly the same?
I'd say slightly less optimistic.
Me
only
too.
Only because of the injuries.
Well, I'd say two reasons. I'd say the injuries. Which injury? The accumulation of the injuries.
I think it's just the
Vince one, honestly, is maybe the biggest one. Like, because that's,
whether or not it's unlucky, whether or not it's just kind of the accumulation of them, okay. is just kind of a bummer.
All right. So the injuries make you slightly less optimistic.
Yes.
Two other things that make me slightly less optimistic is seeing Zach Edey struggle. It's one thing to say it's going to be a learning curve for Zach Edey, right? But seeing him, and again, I missed Saturday's game. I was watching college football. So seeing the struggle Saturday, and that was supposedly his best stretch.
Yeah.
So maybe, but seeing him struggle makes you realize that, okay, he's not just going to come in like 4-year starter, plug and play. He can do the things the Grizzlies want him to do, no problem, right? Like it could be a little bit of a whatever. I have more questions about how long it'll take him to get to be the Zach Edey, even the limited cog that we want him to be. And then the offense stuff, like they had another 20 turnovers. Now, again, I don't put any stock in the fact that they have 20 turnovers, more than 20 turnovers when it's literally none of the dudes are playing. I mean, Brandon Clark played limited minutes. So when Jay Huff is turning the ball over or Jalen Wells is turning the ball over or what, and those people aren't going to play, it's a little less relevant. But still, all those things make me think I'm less optimistic about the fast start. That's what I'll say. We went through, when the schedule came out, you and I went through and did W's and L's, right? And I don't remember what we did over the first 10 games, but I think it was like 8-2. We were highly optimistic. They're going to come back and they're going to lay waste to that soft starting schedule. And I think right now I'm a little less optimistic about the fast start. I'll say that.
Yeah, and also historically they haven't started quickly under Taylor Jenkins. There's always been kind of a slow getting out of the gate, and then they hit like a stretch where they really rip off a bunch of wins. I think it's not just the... I think with the Edey stuff, what it really boils down to is in the back of your mind, no matter how much you want to try to give it the Heisman, some of the criticisms of why people believe that he's not going to be an effective NBA player at times, it is...
Bear out with your eyeballs.
Correct.
Yeah, that's true. All right. There is a definite snap in the air now, Jeffrey. It's unmistakable now. It is crisp out there. And that is a good time to get to Oak Hall. I've got a beautiful Peter Millard coat that I wear from Oak Hall. I have a lovely, lightweight down jacket that I wear from Oak Hall. I'm thinking I can break that out again. You can go on and freshen up your or array of outerwear. Get yourself a beautiful quarter zip. They still have, there's been ups and downs. some ups and downs for Ole Miss this past week, but Tennessee's continuing to be, and Ole Miss is still relevant. As we said, Jeffrey, all I have to do is win their next three games and they'll be right back in the playoff hunt. So if you want to wear a quarter zip or a hoodie in your team collegiate colors, whether it's Memphis, Ole Miss, Arkansas, Alabama, Tennessee, you can head on in there and they have them in the official team colors. So when you're walking to those tailgates or games with a snap in the air, you got Memphis 6:30 tonight. I think it's 6:30 Saturday night. That'll be
ESPNU. Yep.
That'll be cool. And you want to look dapper and be snug. Ocall is the place to go. And holiday season bearing down upon us as well. I recently told Paul, I really mean this. There's not many stores that can change my life. Shopping at Ocall has changed totally how I can present myself when I actually want to look good. The clothes are beautiful and the people are incredibly helpful. They know what they're doing. They will go the extra mile to make sure you look your best. So head on and see our friends at Ocall. We have not mentioned the NFL. We got a lot more to talk about. Penny Hardaway talked to Parth Padhyay of the Daily Memphian. We've got outrage, Jeffrey, over Memphis picked to finish second in the conference, if that's what you choose to indulge in. A lot of other things to get to. We'll do that when we return. It is the Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. The Media Day was held for AAC Media Day down there in Texas, and there's news, Jeffrey. The news is, according to Parth, they are not going to have the tournament at Dickies Arena after this.
Yeah, this will be the final.
This will be the final Dickies Arena. Now, they're not saying we're just moving it to Memphis because those nice people decided to stay in our conference and not go to the PAC. They didn't make that announcement. What they said was moving it to Memphis. The commissioner, when he was here, said not off the table. And of course, they're going to open it for request for proposal, as they should. Like that.
Open it for bidding.
You don't just say we're moving it to Memphis. What you do is you put it out for bid because you want the best bid from Memphis and other cities. And the commissioner did say that multiple cities were interested in bidding on the tournament. Having said that, I think there's a reasonable chance, do you not, that it ends up in Memphis?
Yes.
I think if I were betting on where it would go after this year, I would suggest that it will go to Memphis. Don't you think?
Yeah, I'd be curious to know if they want to do a multi-year deal or if they're just going to kind of like rotate it.
Yeah, normally they do a multi. Well, normally they come up with a multi-year plan.
Yeah.
Right? One way or another. So anyway, that is happening. Also, we have, again, tomorrow night is the St. Jude event where Memphis.
Hoops for St. Jude tip-off classic.
Thank you, Jeffrey. Where Memphis. And I've seen a lot of people, by the way, not just say they're going. I've seen a lot of people recently buy tickets for other people. We got on with that. Joe Sills helped us with that trend at the end of last week. He's a Memphis fan who couldn't be here. And he and some other friends got together and they bought 6 tickets for other people that they gave away through this radio show. So that's tomorrow night. Memphis will be playing UNC. And the Memphis women will be playing South Carolina at FedEx Forum. So that's fun. In the meantime, coaches picked Memphis behind UAB to finish second. Were you outraged?
No, I wasn't outraged because if you look at it, it was very obvious that UAB and Memphis, when you looked at the numbers, were picked either first or second. The difference was... UAB got 5 more first place votes.
UAB made the tournament last year, and they're bringing back, you know, most of their team. Like, I don't have any problem with it. Like, the analytics say Memphis will be better. You know what the analytics say Memphis will be better? Based on a team that has never played before.
Yeah.
Just based on, oh, well, we got this player from here, and that player from there, and this player from here, and that player. It's going to work. Well, I understand I understand why the coaches might want to go with the team that's they've actually seen perform. That didn't surprise me. It neither surprised me nor outraged me.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're someone that wants to take a slight, I don't think it's the fan base. I think it's Penny that could take a slight.
I guess his colleagues.
Like to me, it's almost
his colleagues
like
are like
we
saying
don't...
show me. His colleagues yes. are saying show me. Well, it's interesting you say that because Parthipaidi, I had a conversation with Penny, and it wrote about it in the Daily Memphian, and I'll read you some of the quotes. Talks about how he kind of went dark this summer, right? He didn't speak that much. And when he spoke, he said, I'm not talking. Remember that one time when he said, I'm not talking, taking basketball questions?
Yeah, it was at the golf, one of the golf tournaments.
Yeah. This is what Parth said this is what Penny said to Parth. It was very intentional. I'd never really done that until this year because last season was very disappointing and it's all on my back. At the end of the day, it's going to be on me. So I feel like I grew a lot. To get away, to kind of reflect, I feel like I grew a lot in this offseason. And going into my seventh year, I'm understanding things way, way better. Well, that's encouraging. It's all on him, which is true, by the way. All the good, it's true of all basketball coaches. You recruit the players, you coach the players, it's all on you. You pick your assistants. There's nothing that's on anybody but you.
Yeah, you pick the roster, you pick your assistants, largely get to make your
schedule.
It's all
on you. Now,
yeah.
It's not on you in the sense if you're at a program that never wins and doesn't have any support and doesn't have NIL money, then you can say it's the circumstances. Even then, you took the job. It's only, there's no one else. But at least there you can point to other reasons why you're unsuccessful. There's nothing in a program that's historically been successful, nothing really, and that is more resourced than anyone else in the conference, nothing really for Penny else to talk to. Here's one of the interesting things. He said he leaned on mentors. And here are the mentors who he identified. John Lucas II.
Yeah.
Remember him? Played mm-hmm. at Maryland, former NBA coach. Perry Clark, former Tulane coach, who does TV.
TV, yeah.
And how about this one? An even former Tigers assistant and Hall of Fame coach, Larry Brown. Leaned on Larry Brown.
Yeah.
That's interesting, because I got the sense that Larry bailed out of here because he didn't feel particularly respected by Penny. So I was glad to hear that, honestly, that he still has that kind of relationship with Larry Brown, and that Larry Brown was willing to you know, help Penny, and that Henningway was willing to lean on Larry Brown. More from Penny. It was some self-reflecting on what I need to do better. I've stated this before, but I made a ton of mistakes with just being thrown right in. I came in confident that I can make some things happen. They didn't happen right away. It's so hard to win on this level. And then trying to find that happy medium of staff and players that fit my system, it's just been a whirlwind, really, for the first 6 years. And this offseason was about just kind of reflecting and getting away. It definitely helped my mental. That's a very different Penny than the get the F out of here. You know, I want all the smoke. That does sound, he has been humbled by circumstance and by results, but that he certainly sounds introspective.
Yeah, I think for me the question is, like, I think this clearly is a different mindset. What changed? Because this is a very different mindset even than a few weeks ago.
Well, it's a very different mindset than when he was on that podcast just blasting everybody, you know? Here he said this. Well, this is when? Here you go. It wasn't until early July that he really dug deeper into the process of reviewing his own performance. Quote, right before the second session, I really came to grips with what I needed to do and what my role is in this entire thing. And it's not like I tried to deflect before. It's just that I didn't get a chance, and I wish I did now, to be on someone's bench for 4 or 5 or 6 years to really figure out the dynamics of college basketball. And then things to me would have been so much smoother. For me to have come in on the fly, it was definitely tougher than I expected. About the coaching change, this is what he said. I think everything is where it needs to be now, the staff, the players. I think I went out and handpicked the players I have right now for the toughness side of it. Because I think my best team overall with my personality, not from a talent point of view, was the Kendrick Davis team, where we had two guys, Davis and DeAndre Williams, who knew exactly who they were, and the rest of the team knew who they were. They fit in, and I won my most games, and I should have, could have gone to a Final Four with that team if it weren't for a last-second shot against FAU. I think this team gives me that feeling again. Everybody has a chip on their shoulders. Everybody's connected and together, and it's the same thing with the staff. He said he's been burned before from, quote, just opening my mouth too much. You grow from these things. You've got to see it how other people see it. That to me is a That, to me, is a really important thing to note. You have to try to put yourself in the shoes of other people and view you honestly. How are other people seeing me? You've got to see it how other people see it. I was really fighting a battle that I shouldn't have been fighting for years. I should have just let the basketball do the talking. How about that? I think all of that is now, you know, the roster, it is interesting. Like, I looked at a mock draft the other day, first NBA mock draft of the season. You go for the first round, second round, there's not a Tiger who appears on it. Of course. And yeah, it used to be littered with Tigers, you know?
Yeah. I still think this roster could be pretty good.
I think it's pretty good. And not only that, I have talked to some folks who say that, again, who knows? We didn't know going into last year it was going to blow up, right?
No.
But they do say that the attitude, that this group is a really good group. That's, I'm not talking about their basketball ability.
Yeah.
I'm talking about their willingness to work, their support of the way they support each other. They're like, this is a group that is among the best they've seen under Penny.
I've been told that the leadership of this team is
much very different.
Yes.
Very different. Now, talent may not be as still pretty good. Still pretty good. But the talent may not rival last year, but in the end, we've certainly seen that talent isn't everything. So anyway, encouraging stuff, I thought, from Penny. And again, tomorrow night, and we've been pitching it all for a month now, tonight on my big event, chance to see this Memphis Tiger team for the first time as they take on the University of North Carolina at FedEx Forum. All right, Jeffrey, NFL. It's funny, when we were talking about college football, we said even teams that won, you wonder how to feel about it,
yeah.
Like whatever. And for a very different reason, that's how I feel about Detroit. That was just devastating. They blew out Dallas, humiliated Dallas. Detroit feels like a team that's headed back to the Super Bowl, and then they lose Aiden Hutchinson.
Yes. And
I mean, that's
it's like literally the one player they could not afford.
I mean, Jared Goff, you can't lose Jared Goff.
I mean, yeah, but I'm talking about like that defense is literally built around him being the one guy that can rush
the
passer.
He's a wrecker.
Yes. And they don't have another passer.
He's an absolute wrecker. It just feels like, it didn't feel like the NFL used to be defined by, we now know that the NBA, who's going to win? Tell me who's going to be healthy. That's the answer now, right?
100%.
And now it's becoming that in the NFL too. And I don't know, like I just don't believe that there's more injuries in the NFL. Well, I don't know. And now they're talking, of course, going to an 18-game season. Just seems crazy to me. Every week that you add on, there's more chances of Aiden Hutchinson or the like. And it was just like you had Marvin Harrison had a concussion. Chris Olave had a concussion.
Olave
had a concussion. And you had Aiden Hutchinson with a broken tibia.
Yeah. The thing about Aiden Hutchinson, and I was talking about this with one of my football group chats, isn't it surprising that this play doesn't happen more frequently? Like the roll up, like
yes.
That to me,
it's funny. I was Googling broken tibia,
yeah,
to see how long you're out.
I think it said 6 to 8 months. I think he's done.
Yeah,
this year he's done.
Well, so much. There's so many different broken tibias. Sure. Some are gone for a year. They have infections. They have whatever else. But there's not that many actually. You would think there would be a lot.
Yeah, like to me, it's just like. When you consider how physical the line of scrimmage is, how many times guys get rolled up, like it just it shocks me that that play isn't more frequent than like I would just feel like there'd be a higher frequency of that type of injury than we see. But I mean, it's devastating because he's
just
don't have another pass rusher really,
and they already had the disappointment of the Guardians.
I mean, do you have to
the city?
Do you have to call the Jets? See if you can get Hassan Reddick.
Oh. But you got to pay him, though. The problem with it, it's pretty clear. I think we know now, if you're going to be acquiring Hassan Reddick, you've got to be willing to pay him a lot of money, or he is simply not showing up.
Or his agent will quit.
So, anyway, there was that. And
I mean, I do think it kind of makes the NFL trade deadline a little more interesting, right? Because it feels like there's going to be a few teams that are probably going to have to go get.
It feels like the trade deadline has become more interesting anyway.
Yes.
And that's certainly true since, I mean, the Rams used it to help win a Super Bowl,
yeah.
Right? So But yes, Detroit needs a pass rusher. There's no question that is true. Dallas might need a head coach, although Jerry Jones said he's not going to make a change. Jeffrey,
he does not like to pay people not to work.
Boy, that's tough. Boy, that's tough. I'll tell you one of the things that struck me yesterday. I mean, you had the drama in Philadelphia with Nick Sirianni going at it fans. And then bringing his kids to the postgame.
We're watching the NFL head coach version of the Britney Spears meltdown. Like when Britney was in Malibu, like buzzing her hair. Like
that's what Nick Sirianni is at this point?
Oh, yeah. Did you not see him?
I saw it. Yes.
Yeah.
And then he brings the kids to the postgame press conference, which is what you do when there's going to be controversy.
He had more kids than seats.
And so that happened. I thought one of the observations you made, NFL busting all kinds of records, whatever. There was a story about Roger Goodell and how much money he makes. I read today and how they're trying to take revenues from $20 billion to $25 billion is the next goal.
Fans first.
And yet you think the product kind of stinks this year.
So I have definitely found college football to be way more interesting to watch. And I think it's largely because we still have good teams in the NFL, but the percentage of teams that suck, and not only suck to watch, is very, very high. I will submit, and you tell me if you agree or disagree.
I'm going to call up so I can think about it. So let's just go through it division by division.
All right.
In the AFC East, who stinks to watch?
The Patriots. And as long as they don't have Tua, the Dolphins. Those teams are bummer watches.
Right. The Jets don't stink to watch, and the Bills don't stink to watch. Okay. So up to two. AFC West, who stinks to watch?
The Raiders suck to watch. The Broncos suck to watch.
Okay, but the Chargers don't.
They're mildly...
No, but they don't suck to watch.
Yeah.
Mildly interesting.
Yes.
What we're saying is definitively, when you see there's part of a game, it kind of sucks the life out
Correct.
Of the game. Sucks your desire to watch the game. Out of it. So far, it's four teams that suck to watch. AFC North.
Okay. This one is a duh.
It's only the Browns.
The Browns suck to watch. I would
submit. You're putting the Steelers in there.
Suck to watch, but I will tip my hat to them. I think that they understand they have to make the game like that to win.
I don't think we can include them because they have the glamour of being the Steelers.
Correct.
Right? You got Mike Tomlin, tough. They muddy it up, but we're not going to call them suck to watch. We've got five suck to watch. And in the AFC South?
The Jaguars suck to watch.
Oh, do they ever.
The Titans suck to watch.
Okay.
The other two, I'll say, are like the
Colts and Texans do not.
Correct.
So seven teams in the AFC suck to watch.
Correct.
Okay, moving to the NFC. In the East, NFC East.
The Giants suck to watch.
How many were we up to, did we just say?
That's seven.
So this is eight. Giants suck to watch. Not the Cowboys, Eagles, or Commanders.
No, for different reasons.
Different reasons.
I would submit the Eagles suck to watch,
right. That in and of itself is fun.
Correct.
Same with the Cowboys. So that gets you to eight. NFC West.
There's really no one that really,
sucks
to watch. Because even the Rams aren't a bad watch.
Cardinals can be stinky.
Correct, but they're
not. They're not as boring. No one's really that compelling there, but we're not saying they
Correct.
Just totally suck the joy out of anything.
Correct.
So we're up to eight. NFC North, there's not a team there. They're all interesting. Vikings, Lions, Bears, Packers.
Correct. That's the one division.
And NFC South?
The Panthers suck to watch. The Saints and
No, they don't.
But there's
a minimum. Like I was watching the Saints game yesterday just to watch Spencer Rattler.
Sure.
Right? To see what's this adventure going to be like. And the truth of the matter is, you know who didn't suck to watch yesterday? The Patriots.
Yes.
We called him sucking to watch, but he's better to watch.
Because at least he's relevant. But he's still not a great watch.
Okay, speaking of not suck to watch, but just suck, Will Levis, man.
That's awful.
That's just awful.
He has the worst thing that could have happened to him when you got hurt. And Mason Rudolph, who's not good, we objectively know he's not good. He comes in and the offense looks like it runs better. That's not a good thing.
It is kind of amazing.
Yes.
Well, it's like, you know, Colts looks like it runs pretty well, too.
Yes.
when an aging quarterback. And the other thing that must be a little tough to take for a Titans fan, I mean, I know they weren't at the stage where Derrick Henry was going to be relevant for them. I am gobsmacked by how good he still is.
He's the best running back in the NFL right now.
How is that even possible?
It's unbelievable. At 30.
You're supposed to take a beating at that size.
And it's not only just his age, it's the number of carries he's had.
This was his 20th game of 100 or more rushing yards and two or more touchdowns. He had 132 rushing in this one, two touchdowns, as the Ravens win. Jaden Daniels was good. Like, the Ravens do have a problem defensively. But that was an entertaining game. There was no real suckage there. But I'm with you. It was kind of an uninspiring weekend, really.
I just felt like
it was deflating.
It was a low
Hutchison thing.
It was a low energy day of NFL.
So in other news, Jeffrey, are you familiar with Brantley Gilbert?
I have not heard of his work. I assume is that
well. So Brantley Gilbert is a country rocker.
Okay.
That's what he is. He's a country rocker. And he was playing in a show in Tupelo this past week. And he paused the show while his wife gave birth in the tour bus.
Okay.
And then he returned and continued to do the show. Now, we've before talked about whether you should... We were recently talking about whether you could go to a game. Whether you could go, remember, it was a Brewers fan,
yeah.
A wild card game. A Brewers fan decided to go to the game on the day that his wife was due.
Correct.
And I defended that because if she's not having, you know, it's the due date. The due date is not necessarily that relevant. Here to have the concert then pause and then return and continue the concert.
Does it say where the concert was? Because I got to think this might have been a business decision.
It did say, but I didn't write it down.
Was it Bank South? Yeah, it's probably that one. So if it's an arena show, this is a business decision.
So you think he would have had to cash?
He would have had to probably owe
refund money.
He would have
had
to owe money. Yeah.
You got to think of the kids, little kids' college.
Well, he's fans first.
Kids' college.
Unlike Goodell, when that guy says he's putting the fans first, he means it.
So anyway, shout out to the Brantley family. We got Bills Jets tonight over at FanDuel. New customers bet $5, get $300 in bonus bets if you win a bet on tonight's game. And I've thought about my same game parlay. Josh Allen anytime TD.
Okay.
Dalton Kincaid anytime TD.
I'd need that.
And
you want to go super
Hall.
Square?
I think Breece Hall, anytime TV.
Okay, so we're leaving out James Cook.
I'm definitely leaving out James Cook. What do you think?
I don't hate it. The only thing I'm a little worried is we haven't been running Josh very much.
No, but it's time to get serious.
And it's the Jets.
And it's the Jets. And
this is a statement game.
It's a statement game. Yeah. So I think you will see that, Josh. Now, he may try to do too much and throw picks, but I think you will see a very engaged Josh tonight. I, of course, won't be watching the moment something bad happens. But anyway, go to FanDuel.com/Calkins to make every moment more this season. C-A-L-K-I-N-S. C-A-L-K-I-N-S. Must be 21 or older. Present Tennessee. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable. Bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call Tennessee Redline 1-800-889-9789. What's coming up next?
Jeff, here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. Tim Duncan, the new associate AD, will join the program at 12:25. Jason Munns will join us on Jeffrey Wright and Company with Coach Hurd. It's Monday, so that means Cobb will join Gabe at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Back tomorrow for Now Work Is Done.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.